Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covers the issues that concern you here on the BBS radio network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. Let's begin today with a brief review of the ongoing impeachment charade taking place in Washington. This past week, the House Intelligence Committee heard several government officials involved with Ukraine testify about a lot of hearsay that amounts to absolutely nothing, but was a big deal for those of limited intelligence and the cheerleaders and co-conspirators out there who are hoping it could result in articles of impeachment being drawn up against President Trump, who's done nothing wrong, of course, not that I can see. On Friday, the committee heard testimony from former ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. While most of the mainstream Democratic media tried to spin her testimony as heartbreaking, she was removed by Trump just as Obama removed and replaced ambassadors who worked under his predecessor's administration. And they also wanted to portray this as somehow showing wrongdoing by the president. But it's the president's right, as I understand it, to replace people from prior administrations. Radio talk show host Rush Limbaugh had among the most positive takes on all this, I thought. Let's hear a little of his commentary about it.
Here's the headline from Mediaite. Trump attacks Marie Yovanovitch in real time during hearing. Let me tell you who Marie Yovanovitch is. Let me tell you about her relationship to this entire impeachment process. She has absolutely nothing to do with anything this impeachment is about. She has nothing to do with quid pro quo, nothing to do with bribery. She is a witness to absolutely nothing except the fact that she was removed. She has no knowledge of the phone call on July 25th because she was ousted in May. She is not a witness to anything. She was removed as ambassador in May. That's months before Trump called Zelensky in July. That is months before Gordon Sondland supposedly told a Zelensky aide that Ukraine had to announce an investigation into Burisma to get aid. She's not even a hearsay witness. She is there, and I'm not making this up. She is there because she broke down and cried in her deposition, and it was said that that was very powerful. So they bring her out to testify today. She is essentially, her entire complaint, Marie Yovanovitch, her entire complaint is that Trump was not going through regular channels in conducting foreign policy, meaning he was not using her, and he was not using the State Department channels that she wanted, preferred, and had worked for. In essence, she was not using the Obama foreign policy. Trump was not using the Obama foreign policy apparatus. That is the complaint. Do not doubt me. That's really, when you strip this all away, that's what she's upset about. That's what Kent was upset about. That is what Taylor was upset about. We've got a guy going outside the regular channels. The reason we have a guy going outside the regular channels is that there is a 3-year and counting organized effort to get rid of him. I think Trump should be reelected for getting rid of people like Yovanovitch, for getting rid of people like he's gotten rid of. These were people that were clogging up American foreign policy because they were Obama holdovers, and they were specifically attempting to undermine Trump foreign policy, which they are continuing to do today.
And also, here's an interview by One America News Network with the president's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, on Marie Yovanovitch. Please play soundbite 1A.
Marie Yovanovitch's testimony on Capitol Hill went after the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. She claimed Giuliani was at the center of a baffling smear attack against her character and integrity. He spoke with One America's Chanel Rayon and claims Yovanovitch is lying if she's pretending to be a nonpartisan player.
Marie Yovanovitch, former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, testified before Congress, all but blaming President Trump's attorney Rudy Giuliani for losing her posting in Kyiv, claiming that Giuliani was at the center of a baffling smear attack against her character and integrity. Giuliani told One American News, Yovanovitch is lying if she pretends she is a nonpartisan player.
There are at least five Ukrainian witnesses who are willing to testify against her, not anonymously, like their whistleblower, not hearsay, like their first two witnesses. This may be hard for Adam Schiff to take, but they would actually give real testimony. And what they would say basically is that she was very, very pro-Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election.
Giuliani goes on to say that Yovanovitch's Ukraine embassy was known colloquially by those in the embassy and around it as the Hillary Clinton campaign office.
I don't have any animus toward her. I knew her vaguely, and then in November of 2018, I was given a great deal of information about her, and I didn't just accept the information. I didn't know if it was true or not. I went out and verified it. So all I can tell you is that I have in my files made available to the State Department, but they seem to have deep-sixed them.
Giuliani says the State Department is shielding Yovanovitch, who was removed from her diplomatic post by Trump in May. Giuliani adds it is the president's prerogative to pick his top diplomats and was justified in firing Yovanovitch for being an arguably malicious partisan player.
Let me make it simple. There are five witnesses who say that she instructed the prosecutor general of the Ukraine to dismiss four cases. Two of those cases involved Ukrainian collusion with Democrats to hurt Donald Trump. One of them involved a company owned by George Soros. There are five witnesses who are willing to testify to that. None of them have been called. None of them have been interviewed.
Not only does Giuliani have witnesses that the Democrats are willfully ignoring in their impeachment proceedings, but these witnesses have evidence and are willing to testify under oath. Giuliani urges the Republicans to pound some fundamental questions, including that of Yovanovitch's allegiance going over and beyond mere personal politics.
I would ask her, did you have a party planned on election night to celebrate Hillary Clinton's election? Let her lie about that. I can get 10 witnesses who were invited to the goddamn party. They are all being ignored.
As impeachment proceedings drag on, witness allegiance will become an increasingly imperative question. Giuliani says Yovanovitch's blatant partisan leanings for Hillary Clinton against Trump should be enough to discredit the entire impeachment proceedings and reveal a sinister plot no one has yet brought to the fore. Chanel Vian, One American News, Washington.
And I'd also like to make a few comments about the recent gubernatorial elections in Kentucky and Louisiana. In Kentucky, it was the Republican incumbent who lost to a challenger, Democratic challenger, by very, very close, less than 1%, only about 5,000 votes, I understand. There has been allegations on the right about vote fraud, but they have yet to bring forth any credible evidence of this. There may be some here and there, but exactly how much, I don't know. But it does appear that the Democrat challenger beat the Republican incumbent who was backed by Trump. However, I understand the Kentucky legislature is dominated by Republicans. The new attorney general is Republican. They did a sweep except for the governorship. So Trump really did all right there overall. And this man is the Democrat is considered a more of a moderate. There are some good people left in the Democratic Party. I hope he's one of them, as I understand. Time will tell. But of course, he may have allegiance to the National Party. We'll see later. But also in Louisiana, Democratic incumbent governor, I understand, Edwards, I believe his name, he held on by very close, only about 1% or less. The Republican challenger, an outsider, his name is Rapone, was a businessman who Trump backed and campaigned heavily for, but he was unsuccessful in doing this. But this, again, I think I understand the legislature in Louisiana is Republican-dominated, and this governor, again, is known as a more moderate person who works with them, has been has taken some conservative views, some conservative positions. So this is not a being portrayed. This is being portrayed. These losses as some big bad sign for Trump, but I don't see it as that. You win some, you lose some. Maybe these candidates that Trump backed weren't as well liked or represented in the overall scheme of things. Hard to say, but it doesn't mean that the Trump is doomed here. Now, as a candidate in the 2020 election, I'd also like to read. But we do know that the National Democratic Party and most of the Democrats, or at least many of them, Democratic legislatures, certainly on the national level in Congress, and that are very far left in their political orientation. It's interesting. Attorney General Barr had some fascinating things to say about them in a speech on Friday to the Federalist Society, which was reported on by the Washington Times. The headline reads: Attorney General Barr blasts progressives' anti-Trump resistance. And the article reads, in an address to the Federal Society on Friday evening in Washington, Attorney General William Barr lashed out at the Democratic Party resistance, quote-unquote, against President Trump, saying it is a, quote, incendiary, unquote, and, quote, scorched earth, unquote, movement, signaling that America is ruled by an occupying military power, not an elected executive. And Mr. Barr continues, quote, the fact of the matter is that in waging a scorched earth, no-holds-barred war of resistance against the administration, it is the left that is engaged in the systematic shredding of norms and the undermining of the rule of law. The article says Barr, quote, unquote, the article says Barr told attendees that progressives treat politics as their religion, close quote. There's a quote further down in the article, again, by Barr, starts immediately after President Trump won election, opponents inaugurated what they called the resistance, quote unquote, and they rallied around an explicit strategy of using every tool and maneuver available to sabotage the functioning of this administration, unquote. And continuing again, quote, now the resistance is the language used to describe the insurgency rule, insurgency against rule, imposed by an occupying military power. It obviously connotes that the government is not legitimate. This is a very dangerous, indeed incendiary notion to import into the politics of a democratic republic. Close quote. So we do see that there are problems here on the national level. Now I'd like to give you a look at the people who hope to replace Trump in next year's presidential election, unless they can get their ongoing coup attempt to succeed in removing him from office sooner. But before we do that, let's hear an audio recording of Fox's The Next Revolution with Steve Hilton on the Democrats' hypocrisy and their ongoing attacks on Trump for supposedly being in collusion with Russia or Ukraine or who knows who. Play soundbite two, please.
Right, let's get on with it. For the first time, here it is. And tonight, it's the people versus Democrat hypocrites. The entire political establishment has been consumed by pearl-clutching outrage over President Trump's comments on election information from foreign governments.
The fact that this president has so little moral compass or understanding of the need to protect our nation that he says he would still welcome information from Russia, China, or any other potential adversary if it helps his political campaign is outrageous.
To say that it's okay for foreign countries to interfere in our elections with motives that are not what's in the interest of the American people? Disgraceful, Shocking.
Yesterday, the president gave us once again evidence that he does not know right from wrong. It's a very sad thing. Very sad thing that he does not know right from wrong. I believe that he has been involved in a criminal cover-up.
Accepting assistance from a hostile foreign power like Russia is treasonous behavior.
Remember those four: Warner, Pelosi, Schumer, Jeffries. We already know the Democrats are the party that paid for Russian dirt on Donald Trump and tried to cover it up by hiding it as a legal bill. We already know the Democrats approached the Ukrainian government for dirt on Donald Trump. And we know that foreign governments bought influence over our government for hundreds of millions of dollars through the Clinton Foundation when Hillary was Secretary of State. But there's more. More Democrat hypocrisy, more Democrat corruption, all of it far worse than anything President Trump has even been accused of doing, let alone found guilty of doing. Never mind foreign governments trying to affect our elections, something which the intelligence agencies, Mueller and everyone else said never actually happened, despite the attempts. The real scandal is foreign governments affecting our actual laws through foreign government lobbying. So, let's take a look at those sanctimonious Democrats prattling on about treason. Chuck Schumer, you took money from lobbyists for the Saudi Arabian and Mexican governments. Nancy Pelosi, you took money from lobbyists representing shady companies in Ukraine. Mark Warner and Hakeem Jeffries, you took money from lobbyists for China. We called all four of these Democrat hypocrites to ask if, in addition to taking money, they or their staff have taken any meetings with foreign government lobbyists. None of them would say, of course not, because we can be sure they did. That's how the swamp works. You pay the money, you get the meeting. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the ultimate Democrat hypocrisy. We've seen how Schumer and Pelosi and Warner and Jeffries are in the pockets of Saudi Arabia and Mexico and Ukraine and China. But surely not Russia. Surely after all this fuss, after all these years of hysterical, apoplectic, self-righteous shrieking about Russia, no Democrat would take money from lobbyists for Russia, would they? Chuck Schumer, Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, Robert Menendez, Richard Blumenthal, and yes, Mr. Treason himself, Hakeem Jeffries, have all taken money from lobbyists for Russia. There is only one worse example of Democrat hypocrisy, someone who's running around accusing President Trump of being captured by a foreign power, but who himself is compromised, not just by any foreign power, but by the biggest and most hostile, America's number one enemy, China. Joe Biden took billions of dollars in bribes from the Chinese government in the form of payments to Biden family businesses, and in exchange was soft on China the last time he was in office. Hashtag Joe China. This fuss over foreign election information is a joke when you compare it to the shocking extent to which foreign governments have bought their way into our corrupt establishment. We don't know what favors were traded with foreign governments by Schumer, Pelosi, and all the rest of them. We don't know about any secret meetings they had with lobbyists for hostile powers. But we should know. The Democrats were out this week with a virtue-signaling bill about banning foreign government election information. We'll take them seriously when they put forward a bill to publish the details of all the lobbyists they meet with, when they put forward a bill to ban lobbying by hostile foreign governments. Don't hold your breath. These Democrat hypocrites, just like the rest of Washington, D.C., are totally corrupted by foreign government lobbying and cash. The outrage over election meddling is their attempt to distract from the real foreign interference in our democracy, the institutionalized and anti-American corruption of foreign government lobbying. Tell me what you think of that at Steve Hilton X and at Next Rev FNC.
The current two front runners, as I understand it, in the Democrat presidential competition are former Vice President Joe Biden, who, as you've heard, is up to his eyeballs in corruption allegations, but who claims he's done nothing wrong, and the shrill, strident, self-righteous Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who claims she's a capitalist but sure sounds a lot like a socialist, if not an outright communist. I can go on and on about Biden. Most of you are familiar with him by now. Let's hear a quick rundown on his chances of getting the Democratic nomination as perceived by a few observers here who should have knowledgeable observers on Fox's Sean Hannity program. Play soundbite three, please.
First, one announcement, if anyone cares. The crowded field of Democratic radical socialists just shrunk by one, Governor Jay Inslee. He dropped out of the race. Did anybody even know he was in the race? Joining us now, former RNC chairman, former White House chief of staff, Reince Priebus, and Fox News contributor Tammy Bruce. You know, let's go through a little bit of sleepy, creepy, crazy. Let's see. His own wife, Tammy, if we look at it, that wasn't very encouraging. You know, you're going to have to swallow hard. You know, not good. His brain surgeon says, no, his brain's okay. Can't go to a 7-Eleven or Dunkin' Donuts without a slight Indian accent. Bragging his state was a slave state. And then my favorite. Oh, this is the first time ever you got an African-American that is bright, articulate, and clean. It's storybook. Or poor kids are just as talented as white kids. And Joe 30330, I think that's my favorite, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing that also I think Americans should be concerned about and Democrats should be appalled by, that he's actually in this position. It is clear he should not be. And yet the Democratic Party is so destroyed, and Barack Obama destroyed it in his cultivation of a cult, that they're pushing this man to do it because they do believe that he would have more of an appeal than all the rest of their talent. So there's a point where it's becoming embarrassing for this man to be in this position. His wife clearly wants to support him. She obviously is also worried about the party, but they can't even push through it on their own. And I think that that tells you everything you need to know. But then also the Democrats themselves, it also highlights the contempt they have for the American people and for their own base, that there's no real interest in being there for everyone in the country. They lie about who's a racist. They want to divide and conquer. They're proposing things. Bernie Sanders the other day admitted when he was asked at a town hall how much the Medicare for All would cost. He said, oh, I don't have that in my pocket. Nobody does. We really don't know. They have no idea, and yet they're putting themselves in this position because they believe their own base is ignorant. They believe the American people are dumb, and this is what they have to offer the American people. I hope the Republicans understand this, because the Democrats are really turning into a major problem for the American people.
And then my favorite, Ryan, says his comment, truth over facts, but he's got 8 years of a record. 8 years of economic policy failure, the Iranian deal, 8 years of foreign policy failure. Nobody's even begun to talk about that part.
Well, and the other problem that they have, if you're the campaign manager for Joe Biden, you've got to worry that these gaffes aren't just a pattern. A lot of people are saying, oh, it's a pattern of problem. No, the question is, if this pattern becomes an issue of mental competence, that is the issue that's going to bring down Biden.
Reince,
now, here's the other piece,
already,
and I agree with
that. Hasn't that already happened? Isn't that happening?
Yeah, and I think it is happening. And the media, I think the media and some of the folks in the media that want a more progressive candidate, they want an Elizabeth Warren, they want a Kamala Harris. They're going to swarm over this issue that's plaguing Joe Biden like we can't imagine. Here's the other problem for the Democrats, though. President Trump has outmaneuvered the Democrats on one of their signature issues, which is sentencing reform. Elizabeth Warren's talking about sentencing reform. The only problem they have is that the person they actually have to run against actually did it, and did it more favorably than any president in modern history. So they've got a huge problem right now, not to mention the fact that Newt Gingrich wrote a book called Real Change many years ago. And the whole premise is that you need to frame these issues in such a way that 70% of the American people agree with you on. Who doesn't agree with moving the capital from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? Every president promised it. Trump delivered it. Who didn't believe that the Iran deal was bad? Maybe 30% liked it, but 70% agreed with Trump.
Real quick exit question.
This is what they're facing.
Who gets the nomination as of tonight, Tammy?
Well, I tell you, it won't be Joe Biden. When it comes to who the establishment thinks, I think they believe Kamala Harris is going to have it. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
Who do you think, Rice?
I think Biden will squeak through, but I would look out for Elizabeth Warren.
I'm leaning a slight advantage, Elizabeth, as of tonight. Thank you. Thank you.
Joe Biden supposedly remains the front runner or second runner, according to which poll you consult. But these continue changing as each day passes. Whether Biden can remain in the front running until the Democratic National Convention next year remains to be seen. Also currently, as I understand it, Warren is surging ahead of Biden in some polls, while she remains in second place in others. But as you just heard, there is more and more talk of Warren getting a nomination as the Democrats' choice for their presidential candidate next year. Let's hear a little montage of just some of Warren's public statements on various issues recently. These are drawn from Warren's own campaign ad, several news program interviews and current affairs shows, and including a good analysis of her views on gun control, I thought it was a good one, by a guy named Colin Knorr on Facebook. Will you please play soundbite 4?
Voter suppression is real. We've seen it here in Georgia.
Our last election was, in my opinion, completely corrupt.
Machines not working, just creating different type of loopholes so people can't vote.
Voter access, no matter how you vote, is really important. So we need to be able to increase that, especially in Georgia.
We need a constitutional amendment that every American citizen has a right to vote and to have that vote counted.
It wasn't too long ago, the civil rights era, where we had John Lewis, MLK, fighting for the right to vote.
The majority of my neighbors are decent, hardworking people that vote their conscience.
Let's roll back every voter suppression law that has been used to keep people of color from voting.
We need a president like Elizabeth Warren who will fight for voting rights to ensure that every American citizen and naturalized citizen have the right to vote.
And I think she'll do it.
So I want to start out with immigration.
Uh-huh.
What does open borders mean to you, and do you support that?
No, and there is no Democrat who supports that, so far as I know, at least one who's running for president.
How do you describe it?
Look. I think what we need to do is take a step back and talk about our immigration plans in terms of what we're trying to accomplish. Immigration does not weaken our country. Immigration makes our country stronger. I have put out a plan to expand legal immigration. Donald Trump's been cutting it. I put out a plan to create a pathway to citizenship, not just for dreamers, but for their families, for people who come here to work in agriculture, for people who've overstayed student visas, people who are here to stay. We need a plan that is fair and achievable. We need to stop what's going on at the border. It's chaos at the border, and it's chaos created by Donald Trump. It's created in part by having cut aid to Central America, so you destabilize those governments. That's why it is that people flee for their lives. We also need to refocus our border security. The idea of having an immigration system that can't tell the difference in the risk posed by a terrorist, a criminal, and a 12-year-old girl is a badly broken system. We need to put more emphasis, too, on the criminals, on the terrorists, and on the contraband that's coming through. So for me, it's about moving everything in that direction. I want to get rid of the for-profit detention centers down there. That's nuts. Nobody should make a profit over locking people up. We need to advance our security, and we need to have a system that is consistent with our values. We do those two things, we're going to do great on immigration.
Voter disenfranchisement is real.
Mm-hmm.
In Mississippi, there are 23 felonies that once convicted ban a person from voting for the rest of their lives, literally limiting their citizenship and right to democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Moreover, residents' access to voting is limited by archaic voter registration processes and limited voting formats. How will you expand voting rights to the formerly incarcerated, ensure online voter registration, and non-excuse early voting?
All right.
great question, but can I go you one bigger? And that is, I believe we need a constitutional amendment that protects the right to vote for every American citizen and to make sure that vote gets counted. We need to put some federal muscle behind that. And we need to repeal every one of the voter suppression laws that is out there right now. And I'll tell you one more. We need to make sure that every vote counts. And I want to push that right here in Mississippi, because I think this is an important point. You know, come a general election, presidential candidates don't come to places like Mississippi. Yeah. They also don't come to places like California and Massachusetts, right? Because we're not the battleground states. Well, my view is that every vote matters. And the way we can make that happen... ...is that we can have national voting, and that means get rid of the Electoral College...
Sitting here right now, if I said to you, are you a capitalist? You would say what?
Yes. I love capitalism. I love markets. I think markets really are terrific. I'm a capitalist. But understand this. Markets without rules are theft.
I will put a moratorium in place. No new drilling, no new mining on any federal lands in the United States.
Ooh, how about a wealth tax on the top 0.1%? Make them pay 2 cents. They can afford it. We're going to raise taxes.
You are already a co-sponsor of Bernie Sanders' free college bill. How is your plan better than that plan?
Well, it goes further.
So is it fair to say that your bill is more progressive than Bernie Sanders' bill?
Well, it's certainly bigger.
The most radical thing that you're proposing is Medicare for all. Okay.
You think that's the most radical? I kind of like the 2 cent wealth tax myself. But yeah, I like them all. I'll take them all. We need big structural change in this country, in this economy. We need to take the same approach on guns. Some are obvious, some are there right now, just as you rightly said. We should be doing background checks. We should take weapons of war off our street. I think our ammunition point is one I've read a lot about.
Hold on, wait a damn minute. What happened to voluntary buybacks, Warren? You just sat on the debate stage not too long ago saying you only wanted voluntary buybacks, and now you're on stage in New Hampshire saying you want to take the guns? And yes, I mean all of the guns, because handguns are used in war. Shotguns are used in war. Your grandpappy's bolt-action hunting rifle is also used in war. So yes, she's talking about taking all the guns when she says weapons of war. I'm so sick of this weapons of war phrase. It's literally a statement of nothing, but is used to manipulate the masses. It's like calling a Jeep a vehicle of war because it was used by the military at one point. Or Nike SFB combat boots, boots of war, because many soldiers wear them. This is asinine, but anti-gun politicians like Elizabeth Warren use the phrase weapons of war to describe any gun they don't like because it sounds scary. Not to mention the AR-15 existed and was sold to the public long before the internet existed. And here's the kicker. Handguns, shotguns, and bolt-action rifles are all used in today's war. Except, wait for it, the AR-15. The AR-15 from the ground up was developed and marketed exclusively for civilians and police officers. It, by its very definition, is not a weapon of war. And let's just be clear. The Second Amendment is about the people having the ability to keep and secure a free state. I'm not interpreting that. That's literally what the text says. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Elizabeth went from voluntary buyback to let's take all the guns in a week. Keep in mind, before that, it was common sense gun legislation. It should be pretty clear by now what the true goal is, and respecting the Second Amendment ain't one of them.
As the 2020 presidential race heats up, Democrat candidates are releasing their policy proposals. And America's John Hines has this report.
The National Taxpayers Union has now joined billionaire Bill Gates in offering some pointed and well-researched criticism of Democratic presidential candidate Senator Elizabeth Warren's tax and spending proposals.
I've paid over $10 billion in taxes. I paid more than anyone in taxes. But I, you know, I'm glad to have paid, you know, if I'd had to pay $20 billion, it's fine. But, you know, when you say I should pay $100 billion, okay, then I'm starting to do a little math about what I have left over. Sorry.
But that $10, $20, or even $100 billion may not be enough, according to NTU's Vice President of Policy Promotion, Nicole Kading.
On Friday, Elizabeth Warren released her Medicare for All plan, and it sparked a question. There were almost $20 trillion in tax increases in that plan alone, but how many other tax increases had she promised? Based on the math from her presidential campaign, I estimate that she's proposed raising taxes $26.3 trillion over a decade. That's more than the federal income tax over the entire period. So we could double income tax burdens on every American and still not raise enough revenue to pay for all of her promised tax increases.
That's $26.3 trillion with a T. More in taxes, this according to a new report just released by the NTU.
So over the next decade, the federal government's total tax collections are estimated to be about $45.5 trillion. You can think about this as, in essence, she wants to increase federal revenues by 63%. Over a decade. This is a massive tax increase that she's proposing.
According to the NTU report, Warren's tax hike would be nearly as much as current expected tax collections for both individual and corporate income taxes combined. These tax hikes would hit families, businesses, and estates. And contrary to her claims, the NTU says many of these plans would in fact raise taxes on the middle class.
Senator Warren is promising that her tax increases won't hit the middle class, that they're only going to hit the richest billionaires, and they're only going to hit corporations. Unfortunately, once you dig into the math, that's simply false. Many of her tax increases, for instance, in her Medicare for All plan released last week, would raise taxes on the middle class.
Details and a copy of the just-released National Taxpayers Union analysis of the Warren tax increases is available at NTU.org. John Hines, One America News, Washington.
Elizabeth Warren claims she's a capitalist. She sure comes across as a communist, or at least another socialist, another kind of socialist. She, like all other radical left-wing Democrat candidates, wants continued mass immigration from the third world so these immigrants can be showered with benefits and given the vote to elect and ensure a permanent left-wing Democrat majority in control of the government. Every vote must count, she says. Do away with the constitutional electoral college and voter ID laws, of course, which are voter suppression. Every vote matters, no matter who votes. Every American citizen, naturalized or native-born, has the right to vote, should they register to vote. Why are these people claiming that they're not? Well, any kind of voter ID law obviously is voter suppression. So let's get rid of it and let anybody vote and claim they're a citizen. This is my take on this anyway. Sure looks like socialism to me. But Elizabeth Warren, after all, is inevitably the product of these big, fabulously rich corporations headed by people like Bill Gates, which gave and continue to contribute huge sums to all these leftist causes. And in case you didn't realize it, that was Bill Gates, by the way, talking about the billions he pays in taxes. So it's only poetic justice that is quite fitting that Elizabeth Warren now comes along for most of Bill Gates' money and that of others like him, but in reality, for everybody else's money as well. Before we move on, let's hear a few more comments from another possible contender for the Democratic presidential nomination, Hillary Clinton, who continues to claim the 2016 election was stolen from her by Donald Trump and possibly Russians, by possible voter suppression, by fired FBI Director James Comey's investigation into the case of her missing emails, some of them classified, run through that now destroyed server in the basement of her home in New York. It seems that Hillary blames a whole bunch of things for her defeat, except primarily herself. These comments that she's giving here, you're going to hear in a few minutes, come from various fawning mainstream media interviews with her and news shows, news clips showing her speeches. Please play soundbite 5.
You know, I'm not sitting here as some little woman standing by my man like Tammy Wynette. I'm sitting here because I love him, and I respect him, and I honor what he's been through and what we've been through together. And, you know, if that's not enough for people, then heck, don't vote for him.
I think we know what we're up against. We do, don't we? Donald Trump has pledged to appoint Supreme Court justices who will overturn marriage equality. And if you read about the people that he says are the ones he's likely to appoint, he's not kidding. You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up.
If you look at the map of the United States, there's all that red in the middle where Trump won. I win the coasts, I win, you know, Illinois and Minnesota, places like that. But what the map doesn't show you is that I won the places that represent two-thirds of America's gross domestic product. So I won the places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic, moving forward, and his whole campaign, Make America Great Again, was looking backwards. You know, you didn't like black people getting rights, you don't like women, you know, getting jobs, you don't want to, you know, see that Indian American succeeding more than you are. Whatever your problem is, I'm going to solve it.
Your name doesn't come up much on any campaign except for Donald Trump's. Lock her up is still a big popular line.
I believe he knows he's an illegitimate president. He knows. He knows that there were a bunch of different reasons why the election turned out the way it did. And I take responsibility for those parts of it that I should. But, Jane, it was like applying for a job and getting 66 million letters of recommendation and losing to a corrupt human tornado. And so I know that he knows that this wasn't on the level. I don't know that we'll ever know everything that happened, but clearly we know a lot and are learning more every day, and history will probably sort it all out. So, of course, he's obsessed with me. And I believe that it's a guilty conscience in so much as he has a conscience.
And tonight it also appears that WikiLeaks has released transcripts of Hillary Clinton's paid speeches. You remember all the fuss about those? BuzzFeed News published lengthy excerpts this afternoon. And here are Hillary Clinton's comments to Banco Itaú, a former Brazilian bank. Quote, "My dream is a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders. Sometime in the future, with energy that is as green and sustainable as we can get it, powering growth and opportunity for every person in the hemisphere."
Example, I'm the only candidate which has a policy about how to bring economic opportunity using clean, renewable energy as the key into coal country, because we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business.
7 on a Wednesday morning now, the 2016 presidential campaign probably going to go down as one of the wildest and most, with Donald Trump's surprising upset of Hillary Clinton.
It was a race she was sure she'd win. She says so in her new book called What Happened. And Secretary Clinton is with us now. This is her first. Secretary Clinton is with us now. This is her first live interview since Election Day. Secretary Clinton, good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Thanks for getting up early with us. We appreciate it.
I'm glad.
I remember I gave birth 9 months ago, and afterwards they come to you and they say, "How's your pain? Scale to 10, 1 to 10. How's your pain?" So I thought Let's start there. How's your pain? How are you doing?
Well, it's gone down the scale. I mean, it was probably 25 when the election ended in such a surprising and for me, distressing way. But part of what has happened over the last months for me was writing a book that gave me a chance to look at everything that happened, you know, what I did, what I could have done better, what my campaign could have done better, but also these forces at work during the election and still at work when you think about Russia and other places that are of concern to me. So it was cathartic, and I feel, you know, here I am, and I hope that people will find it useful and informative.
Cathartic is an interesting word because people are using words to describe this book that they don't normally use in association with you. Unrestrained, very candid. People say you've taken your political straitjacket off and been unleashed a little bit to say what you really wanted to say. Did you view it as a historic document, or did you view it as kind of a literary version of a cleanse for you?
Matt, both. I really saw it as both personal and historical. It started out for me, trying to just come to grips with what happened and to be as candid as I could with myself, that's where it had to start, but then also to look at it in a historic frame and say, you know, what was at work here? In addition to the mistakes that I made, which I recount in the book, what about endemic sexism and misogyny, not just in politics, but in our society? What about the unprecedented action of the FBI director? What about the interference by an adversary nation to determine or tilt the outcome of our election? What about voter suppression? You know, things that I think are just as important today as they were a year ago.
And if we put all those factors that you just laid out in a pie chart,
right?
What's the biggest chunk? What's the biggest cause of your loss? What part is Comey? What part's Russia? What part's you?
Well, I think the determining factor was the intervention by Comey on October 28th. I mean, as I write in the book, and I could have put much more into the book, and, you know, independent observers like Nate Silver and others say, yes, but for that intervention, I would have won. But it stopped my momentum. It drove voters from me who, understandably, this is not about the voters who were saying, well, wait, what does this mean and how do I evaluate it? And so I think that, in terms of my personal defeat, was the most important factor.
Can I just ask you, that was 11 days before the election.
Yes, it
if
was
we
bad.
Had been privy to be at your kitchen table, when you heard the announcement that James Comey was saying, we're back looking at these emails, what words came out of your mouth? Be specific.
Well, specifically, I write about it in the book because I learned about it on the campaign plane. And I was stunned, to be honest. I didn't know what to think about it because I knew there was nothing there. And we had trouble finding out what was really going on. And so I was just dumbfounded. I thought, what is he doing? The investigation was closed. I know there's no new information. I've certainly given everything of any relevance to them. And then it became clear this was not necessary. He could have called me up. He could have called others involved up and said, hey, can we look at this new stuff just to make sure it's stuff we've seen to get before? Absolutely, have at it. But no, he had to write letters to Congress, of which immediately were leaked. So I feel very strongly that he went way beyond his role in doing what he did.
So there you go. Her election loss was all about discrimination and wrongdoing, evil doing by deplorables with their racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia and Islamophobia. Russians, James Comey, Americans living in states between the coasts, and all whatnot of forces at work and still at work against the heroic Hillary, who is untainted by any corruption. As she said, there's nothing there. Of course not. I have no doubt Hillary would like to run again for president, and she may yet. We will see. Whoever winds up getting the Democratic Party's nomination for president next year, you can be sure they will be catering to their far-left political base and hoping to steer the country hard to the political left, while, of course, keeping their own fortunes, which they have amassed, being at this goal. I keep recalling the observation of David Horowitz of the Freedom Center, Horowitz, a former Marxist and former darling of the leftist-dominated mainstream media and popular culture, who's written widely about the left in America, has said that the Democratic Party today is the Communist Party. And he's not kidding. If you're familiar with the late writer George Orwell, whose real name was Eric Blair, and his novel 1984 about a totalitarian socialist state in Britain, you may recall the Orwellian concept of doublethink. And you can apply it to today's Democratic Party operatives in the media, academia, government, and elsewhere. They say what they want you to hear, but they often mean something else. Recall also that for socialists, the end justifies the means. The end is supposedly utopia, and the means are any means necessary to accomplish this. They tell you what they think you want to hear in order to persuade you to go along with them. The 2020 presidential race is right around the corner, and it'll be interesting indeed to see who winds up with the Democratic Party's nod for its presidential candidate. I have to agree with Rush Limbaugh when he said recently that he can't recall a time in his life when more was at stake in an election in terms of what will become of this country. Something to keep in mind. Well, that's a wrap for another show. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot. As always, I hope you found our content today of interest. Have a good evening.